हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 16, chapter 2, canto 11. In answer to the king's question, one of the Navayogendra's kavi spoke as follows. Those means of advancement which are described by the personality of Godhead himself, and which enable even foolish persons easily to achieve perfect self-realization, are called Bhagavad Dharma. Because it's coming from the Lord, it's about the Lord, and so it's something that all living entities can take part in. So it's the perfection, it's the essence of everything. Formalizing that, you get the Pancharatra. Right? So this Bhagavad Dharma is that essential point. This Bhagavad Dharma, manifested as service to the lotus feet of the infallible Supreme Lord, eradicates all fear for the living being, right? Because it establishes them in their relationship with the Lord. By abiding in the Bhagavad Dharma, one will never stumble or fall, even while running with both eyes closed. Right? You can't go wrong. You're chanting, you're associating with devotees, you're worshiping with the... What's the problem? You just keep going, right? Whatever one does with his body, mind, words, intelligence, consciousness, senses, and natural proclivities should all be offered to Lord Narayana. Living entities averse to the Lord's lotus feet come under the control of the Lord's illusory energy, Maya. They forget the Lord's identity and are trapped by the illusion of identifying with the temporary body. Under the sway of material attraction, they become greatly fearful. Thus, the best thing for them is to surrender their very life energy to a qualified guru and execute worship of the Supreme Lord, the absolute controller of Maya, with pure devotion. Just as by eating one gradually appeases his hunger, and with every bite feels more and more satisfied and nourished. A surrendered devotee achieves a detachment from all objects other than Krishna, gains direct personal experience of the Lord, and relishes pure love for the Lord all simultaneously. Right? Just as in eating, then you taste the things, it nourishes the body, it gets rid of the hunger, in the same way, by pure devotion, then you gain all these things. You become detached from anything not connected to Krishna. You then gain the direct experience of working with the Lord, and you relish that relationship. Next, Javier spoke, describing different characteristics of first-class, second-class, and third-class devotees. One who offers prescribed worship with faith to the deity of Lord Vishnu, but has no devotion for Vaishnavas and things related to Vishnu, is a materialistic devotee. One who shows love for the Lord, friendship for the Lord's devotees, mercy for the ignorant, and indifference to the enemies of Vishnu and the Vaishnavas is an intermediate devotee. And one who sees the presence of the Supreme Lord in everything and sees everything within the Lord is the topmost devotee. The first-class devotees are described in 8 verses, which conclude by stating that the first-class devotee keeps the Supreme Lord perpetually fastened to his own heart with ropes of affection. Lord Hari never leaves the heart of such a devotee, right? Because you can't catch the Lord, right? It doesn't matter who tries to catch the Lord, they can't, right? So then it comes down to is by the ropes of affection. That's how the Lord is caught, right? Otherwise, he can't be caught. Shloka Anusharanam, summary of verses. Verses 1 to 27. Vasudev asked Narad Muni about Bhagavad Dharma. 28 to 43. Maharaj Nimi's first question answered by Kavi. Verses 44 to 55. Maharaj Nimi's second question answered by Javier. Verses 1 to 27. Vasudev asked Narad Muni about Bhagavad Dharma. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, eager to engage in the worship of Lord Krishna, O best of the Kurus, Narad Muni stayed for some time in Dwarka, which was always protected by the arms of Govinda. The BBT purport states, according to Jiva Goswami, the word Abhikshnam indicates that although Narad Muni was frequently sent by Lord Krishna here and there for various pastimes, such as inquiring about the affairs of the world, Narada continuously returned to reside in Dwarka. The word Krishnopasana, Lalasaha, indicates that Narada was very eager to be near Krishna and worship him. Because of the curse of Daksha, Narada is never allowed to live continuously in one place. Sridhar Swami, however, has pointed out, Natasyam Sapade Prabhavaha. In Dwarka, there is no influence of curses or other such evils, because Dwarka is the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and is always protected by his arms. So, one may ask, but Narada can't stay anyway. How can he stay in Dwarka? Because Dwarka is transcendental. It's not affected by material curses, and it's protected by the Lord. Therefore, then he can reside there. Right? But it doesn't mean that there's not things to do, and Krishna sends him out for different things and different services. So he goes and does, but when he's finished, he comes back there. Otherwise, if Krishna's not here, he just keeps moving around the universe. Yes?
We see that in the 10th canto specifically, many devatas and different devotees, they have the opportunity to actually spend some extra time with the Lord and in his association with his associates. But it didn't happen much, except for Narada. Narada, it seems like he takes full advantage of that sangha. But others, they spend minimum time, offer prayers, and then, go to their abode, continue their service and like
but
that.
But what is their position? What is his position? Means if you look at that, what would be the difference then? This, like, we take the platform of devotion, pure devotion, mixed devotion. What is Narada on?
Pure devotion.
What would these others be on?
Mixed.
Right. So, because the demigods are known as, they're famous as neophyte devotees. So they see the Lord, but the Lord's devotees and the paraphernalia isn't as important to them. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, therefore, if the Lord's important, but then if you hang around with the Lord, then there's all these associates and all this paraphernalia.
Right.
And if you don't care about that, then why you would want to stay? Right? They have the Lord, they think of the Lord, so they can think of the Lord in their own place. So in that way, then their devotion will flourish from their own position. Does that make sense? So it's all about desire. That's what we're saying. The free will, the living entity, is desire. And so if you desire to serve the Lord, to be situated in pure devotion, have that taste for the holy name, then that will be cultivated. But if you don't, then whatever it is that you are cultivating, that's what will develop. But because it's a complete process, that area will develop, but at being purified, the others will start to become attractive. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's like the Marwari saying, first take the little finger, then take the whole hand. So bhakti is any place where it can catch, then it develops there. Somebody's just totally into prasad, but eventually all the other processes will come. Someone's into chanting, all the other processes will come. Someone's into diddy, where all the other processes will come. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's just that's their position. What would they do there? Now they've understood Krishna is the Supreme and all that. They could surrender at that point. Because now and again, not so much, but I can't think of examples, but kind of remember there's ones where like Raghunath Das Goswami. He wants to surrender there, but that he's told, no, you go back and do your things, and from there, then it will happen. Or Gopu Kumar, he's on Vaikuntha, he wants to go to Goloka. They say, no, you come back here, and then from here he goes there. So you'll see that sometimes then it's for the unfolding of the pastime or for their development, than being in their natural position, you know, means whatever they're from, then that will enhance the development of their bhakti, which will bring them to that goal, that you understand, that sadhya. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But much of the time we see these demigods, they were happy where they were. They did something wrong. They ended up as a tree or something else. And so now having that happened, and now they're corrected from that, and now seeing things, they'll go back to their position, but now continue in devotion. So even though the demigods may be famous as neophyte devotees, but these particular devotees aren't exactly on that position now. Because now they'll be absorbed in the Lord and they'll progress and very nicely then develop and go back to Godhead. Does that make sense? Because
yeah.
Otherwise, what are these two monster demigods going to do in Vrindavan? You know, what service can they do? They can't, you know, they wouldn't fit there. So they would have to come as cowherd boys or something, but does that make sense? Yeah. You know, so sometimes there's just a right time also. That's another approach. Just like the sages at Dandakaranya, then they surrender to Ramachandra, but, you know, wrong pastime. So then, you know. But they could come and take part in the Dorka pastimes. You know, as demigods. So, yeah. Sukadeva Goswami continued, "My dear King, in the material world, the conditioned souls are confronted by death at every step of life. Therefore, who among the conditioned souls would not render service to the lotus feet of Lord Mukunda, who is worshipable even for the greatest of liberated souls?" One day, the sage among the demigods, Narada, so he's made this point, you know, so who wouldn't surrender to the Lord? Then he says, so now we start next day. "One day, the sage among the demigods, Narada, came to the house of Vasudeva. After worshipping Narada with suitable paraphernalia, seating him comfortably and respectfully bowing down to him, Vasudeva spoke as follows. Sri Vasudeva said, 'My Lord, your visit, like that of a father to his children, is for the benefit of all living beings. You especially help the most wretched among them, as well as those who are advanced on the path towards the Supreme Lord, Uttama Shloka.'" The BBT purport states, "In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Narad Muni is described as a manifestation of the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Right, because he's counted as one of the 33 incarnations. There it is stated that Narad is especially empowered to give instructions in the art of devotional service to Krishna. Narada is especially able to advise the conditioned souls as to how they can dovetail their present activities with the devotional service of Krishna without unnecessarily disrupting their present life. Right? Because the point is what they could do. So those demigods, because they don't have that desire, then if they were to just try to surrender at that point, it might not work out as much for them. Because they may not be advanced enough. So, what is Narada Pancharatra? It's talking about, it's a Pancharatra, so it's talking about worship of the deities. It's a Pancharatric scripture. So it'll talk about the philosophy of how the deity is not, you know, about Krishna, his supremacy, and how the deity is non-different from the Lord. It'll talk about one's daily practices. It'll talk about how you worship the deity and how and festivals. So, jnana, karya, kriya. Jnana, charya, I can't remember. Oh well. Sri Vasudeva continued, "The activities of demigods lead to both misery and happiness." "The activities of demigods lead to both misery and happiness for living beings, but the activities of great saints like you, who have accepted the infallible Lord as their very soul, result only in the happiness of all beings." Right? So becoming Krishna conscious, that's how you become happy. Right? "Those who worship the demigods receive reciprocation from the demigods in a way just corresponding to the offering. Right? Exactly how you worship, that's how you'll get. The demigods are attendants of karma, like a person's shadow. The sadhus are actually merciful to the fallen, because they go beyond the karma. Right? So they go beyond, they go from the shadow to reality. The BBT purport states, the words chayeva, karma, sachivaha, are significant here. Chaya means shadow. The shadow of the body precisely follows the movements of the body. The shadow has no power to move in a way different from the movement of the body. Similarly, as stated here, the results the demigods award to living beings correspond exactly to the living beings' actions. The demigods are empowered by the Lord to follow precisely the particular karma of a living entity in awarding him happiness and distress. Just as a shadow cannot move independently, the demigods cannot punish or reward a living being independently. Right? They have to just follow what's happening in the activities of the living entity based on them following the laws of nature as given by Krishna. Right? That's all they can do. They can't perform an activity outside of that. And we see when they do, like Indra tried, it doesn't work out very good. On the other hand, devotees of the Lord, such as Narad Muni, by their potent preaching, can interfere in the karma of a living being by persuading him to give up his fruit of activity and mental speculation and surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this regard, so that's why Lord Krishna means, generally you always see that someone's surrendering to Krishna in the other ages. Right, so, you know, they're following the Vedic culture, and so naturally it's there. At some point they may surrender by that association. But the problem in Kali Yuga, people don't follow the Vedic things, they don't associate with devotees, so what's going to cause surrender? Right? Nothing. So, then only the association of devotees can save them. Right? But, the point is, the living entity is to be liberated from material entanglement, then that's Krishna. But unless you surrender, how is Krishna going to reciprocate? Not that he's not independent, these are his rules. But the point, what we're talking here is we're looking at the rasa aspect. Right? So then Krishna himself can't be the one who does this. Because only a devotee can do this. But only Krishna can give liberation. Right? So what form of Godhead can give liberation and give that mercy to the living entities even if they don't ask for it? The devotee. So what incarnation of Krishna comes as a devotee? Lord Chaitanya. Right? So you have the best form of Krishna and you have the best form of the devotee combined. So it doesn't get better than this. Yeah? So that's why Advaitacharya called him, because he's Mahavishnu. He's the super soul of the material manifestation, and he can't do anything because no one's, you know, surrendering. So therefore he has to call Krishna, because he's the only one that can do that in the mood of Radharani. Then the preaching goes on. Sometimes, in this regard, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has commented that unless one is engaged as a surrendered soul in the devotional service of the Lord, he cannot actually be considered nishkama, or free from personal desire. Sometimes a materialistic person will engage in charity or altruistic activities, and in this way consider himself a selfless worker. Right? But he's still engaged in karma because he does this selfless work, but what will be the result? He'll get the karma for selfless work. Right? So that means whatever good he's done, he'll get a pious reaction for that and get material benefits in the future. Right? Similarly, those who engage in mental speculation with the ultimate goal of merging into the impersonal Brahman aspect of the Lord also advertise themselves as being selfless or desireless, because they're following the path of Naishkarmya, supposedly, that they're not interested in the fruitive results. They want the aspect of liberation. So technically it's still, you know, fruitive, but it's fruitive within renunciation rather than within sense enjoyment. Right? So it's given a different position. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, however, such karmis and jnanis, while busy in their so-called, quote-unquote, selflessness, are in fact servants of lusty desires. In other words, they have not perfectly understood their position as eternal servants of God. Right? So only the devotees actually can be nishkarma. Right? So Narad Muni, that's one of the areas that he preaches. He preaches Pancharatra and Naishkarmya. These are the two fields that he preaches. So it's naturally then a discussion on Naishkarmya. He's going to be the man. Right? How to perform your duties without attachment. You know, to please Krishna. The altruistic karmi falsely considers himself the best friend of humanity, although he is unable to give actual benefit to others because he is ignorant of the eternal life of bliss and knowledge beyond the temporary hallucination of material existence. Right? So the idea of, okay, I'm not the controller, I'm not the enjoyer, right? So altruistic people generally consider themselves not that. But they consider themselves, I'm the friend of everybody. Right? I'm not the controller of everybody, I'm not the enjoyer of everybody, right? Because that's not considered nice. But I'm the friend of everybody. Right? You understand? So that's just you it shifts like that. And so now it's the tendency, the modern kind of social political position is take that I'm the friend of everyone. Right? It's not that I'm the controller and I'm the successful in that. People are successful, they kind of play it down. You know, personal. He's successful, that's good, but his personal pride in that, that's played down. But before, you go back some time, the guy's rich, he's a little proud of it, and everybody encourages, because that's what everyone wants to be. But since now, that's very difficult, then now it's that pessimistic side comes in, but you're still towards authority and all these things, but you still want to have that optimism, so therefore then the optimism comes as a friend rather than I'm going to be the controller and enjoyer here. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, you sit around with all your friends and kvetch about everything what goes wrong and about the establishment and all that, but when you have an opportunity, you try to do things that benefit other people, however much you can. Right? Right? Very up to date. Similarly, although the jnani proudly declares himself God and invites others to become God also, how that works, I don't know, he neglects to explain how the so-called gods have come to be bound by the laws of material nature. Right? Because they can't explain it. You can say, well, they have the philosophy, oh, because they're being covered by illusion, right? Like that, like the ether is covered by the pot. But the point is the ether is not covered by the pot. You know? The point is, so then it's covered by that. Okay, so where does illusion come from? Oh, that comes from the jiva thinking they're separate from Brahman. Then you get illusion. So it doesn't make sense. How can you get a jiva by Brahman being, there's no jivas, then you take Brahman, that illusion that covers a portion of Brahman, then you call that portion that's covered, now you call that a jiva. Okay, so where does the illusion come from, since everything's Brahman and all that, and Brahman has no transformations to become illusion. So therefore, no, it's because when the jiva, then when he considers himself different from Brahman, that produces illusion. You know what I'm saying? So you're saying it makes no sense. You know what I'm saying? So they can't explain it. He neglects to explain how. They'll have their philosophies, but it doesn't explain anything.
In short, they say that jiva and illusion are cause and effect simultaneously of each other.
Jiva and illusion are cause and effect of each other simultaneously. But why would there? Where's the motive to do that? Why would Brahman want to do that? Because then they'd have to be coming from Brahman, but they can't come from Brahman, so they can't come from somewhere else. So how could it even arise, the situation? You know? That's the... Yes. Actually, the attempt to become God is based not on love of God, but on the desire to take the same status as God. Okay, so here they want to become God, not the same as God. You understand? Like the cowherd boys, the ones who are, the, like, say, the equals, then they're the same as Krishna. They look, they have the same kind of bodily features, they have the same qualities, everything. And when it comes to things, then they're always saying, yeah, I can defeat you in a wrestling match, you know? Things like this. So, but it's based on love for Krishna. So there's always a difference. But this other one, there's no love. You're trying to become Krishna, so then that way they merge into Krishna. But if they were so fabulous that they're God, why wouldn't Brahman merge into them? You know? You never hear of that one. Yes.
I think in yoga also, it doesn't say directly, you can become God, but it infers, like, by practice, then you, that option is there. If you want, you can take it.
Yes. But... that's the difficulty. They infer, they do this, that. They can't give solid evidence. That's the point we're seeing in Vedanta Sutra as you go through. Then they can't give solid evidence. They'll quote from the scriptures, they'll have their own speculations that they'll be quite adamant about, you know, up to a point. But it gets to a point in the philosophy, they have no answers. And, it's just the way it is. But how often do they find someone who will talk to them on that level? Right, so therefore they go unimpeded because the common person won't think because it's mental speculation, therefore it appeals to the mind, therefore it sounds great. You know, like if I say, hey, you want to make a quick $1 million?
Sure.
Yeah, but think about it. Is there such a thing as a quick $1 million? No, but because you want money, so therefore if I come along and say you want to make a quick million, it says, yeah, you know, all you have to do is this, you know. And it's there on YouTube, and everybody can look at it. And, you know, it's a 5-minute video. You know, so, you know, why, if that's there, why isn't everybody a millionaire, right? You understand? But the mind accepts it, and then you'll go chasing that. Well, okay, this guy can't give, who else can give? And then there's plenty of people who are willing to take advantage of the fools. And so, therefore, you get the big gurus, you know, the corporate gurus and the political gurus and the academic gurus and the, you know, long hair and long beards, you know, gurus, you know, that come from the Himalayas. You know, you get all these different kinds of gurus. Like that, right? And then you also get the Samoan, he's also guru. You know? That makes sense? Because he weighs about 500 kilos, right? So he's the most guru of all of that, right? You know, he could bring them all together, sit on them, and they'd all be defeated. So he's the topmost of all gurus. You know, so the point is, and he'd probably be better association than any of those guys, right?
He's quiet.
Huh?
He's quiet.
He's quiet.
He's quiet.
Yeah, yeah, he's quiet. Nice guy, you know. So much better guru. In other words, the desire to be equal in all respects to the Supreme is simply another materialistic desire. Therefore, the karmis and jnanis, because of their dissatisfaction in artificially trying to fulfill their own desires, can show no actual mercy to the fallen souls. In this regard, right, so that's the point, is Narad Muni showing this is real compassion.
Yes.
What others are doing, it's not real compassion. Because there is some motive of themselves in the way of control and enjoy. You say, oh no, but you have to be nice. Why do you have to be nice? What's the rule? Do you have to be nice socially? Because I want to be dealt with nicely. That's why everybody should deal nice. And I'm willing to cooperate with that. Because I want to be dealt with nicely. You know, so it's not actual compassion. Yes.
But you're also trying to preach, and then we see, although we're all connected with the Guru Parampara, every preacher, you know, he has his own limitations. So, what defines those limitations?
I mean, ultimately it's faith, and what Krishna, and based on one's surrender, what Krishna reveals and the ability he gives. But the point is when you're dealing the absolute truth, then because it's Krishna, it's complete in itself. You know, like you see is, I'm not sure, isn't it Chaitanya Charitamrita? It's defining one devotee. They would just go door to door and just ask them to chant Hare Krishna. That's all they do. And then the guy knock on the door and say, please chant Hare Krishna. And the man in the house says, no, I can't chant Hare Krishna. He'll say, thank you, and then go to the next house. That's his preaching. That's all he does. Just goes door to door, gets everyone to say Hare Krishna. Because once you've said it, then, you know, the process, yeah, your material life is finished. It's just a matter of time. You know? So there's it's a matter of what you and your position. Was that on this page, or was that? No, I was talking about Narad Muni. Yeah, I don't remember. It was saying about their natural proclivity. So it's just you're taking that natural proclivity, taking that, connecting it to Krishna. And then you function within that. It doesn't matter that other devotees are doing different things. That's why there's the appreciation of the Vaishnavas. Because everybody being an individual, either based on their spiritual identity or just even based on the conditioned identity, then they're engaging in devotional service in a unique way. And because this devotional service is perfect, therefore every Vaishnav has a position of respect. Does that make sense? So it doesn't matter that someone else is doing something different. You do what you do. You know what I'm saying? But it's not that someone doing great service or big subservice is not appreciated. But that means that they do by their nature and all that, that they're doing that. But at the same time, is one, you'll appreciate what's there, either from the platform of by appreciating, they'll be inspired and they'll keep doing it. Or you're appreciating because they naturally are doing those things and continuing that. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you say, you have the new devotee, he's doing some huge book distribution. You encourage that, because one, they'll be inspired, they'll do that, they'll continue to do. Because even one more day of such book distribution is such a glorious position, and how much spiritual benefit they gain and others from, you know, taking part in that. But at the same time is, then they might stop. But the point, that's never lost, so it's glorious anyway. But then on the other side, you have those that, you know, it's been 40 years, 50 years, they're still distributing books. And so there's that glory of that commitment, that ability, and all that that Krishna is giving. You know what I'm saying? So, in any case, devotional service is always glorious. And we do our best, but don't worry that it's not the same as someone else. Because if everybody was exactly the same, then, you know... Does that make sense? Yeah.
It is on page 20. Pure devotion service. Narada is saying it. It is on page 20.
Oh, so it was in the introduction. It was talking about how Narad Muni engages like that. Yeah, we'll get to it then. Thank you. Therefore, the karmis and jnanis, because of their dissatisfaction, artificially trying to fulfill their own desires, can show no actual mercy to the fallen souls. In this regard, Sri Madhavacharya has quoted the Uddama Samhita, Sukham Ichanti Bhutanam Prayo Dukhasasa Nirinam Tatapi Tebhya Pravara Deva Eva Hare Priya. Rishis want happiness for all beings and are almost always incapable of tolerating the unhappiness of men. Nevertheless, the demigods are superior because they are very dear to Lord Hari. Right? So, the demigods, because they're devotees. So the Rishis, the brahminical aspect, that they're there and they're very compassionate to all the living entities, that's very good. That's your standard, you say, human platform. But the demigods, because of that devotional, that's why they're in that position. Does that make sense? But although Sri Madhvacharya has placed the demigods in a higher position than the merciful rishis, Srila Jiva Goswami has stated, Sadhavastuna karmanu gata. The sadhus are actually better than the demigods because the sadhus are merciful regardless of the pious or impious acts of the conditioned souls. Right? So now if you're looking at it in the reciprocation point, right, because that was the point being mentioned, then the demigods is at what you do only that you do the pious activity, they'll reciprocate. You do the impious, you'll get an impious result. But the sages, then, whether you're pious or impious, they'll try to benefit you in a pious way. Right? So on that platform, the sages are better. But the other platform that's being the pointed out is the aspect of devotion. The rishis don't necessarily have devotion, so that way the demigods are superior. Even though you could say their renunciation, their personal qualities and that are greater than the demigods, still the demigods are greater because of the aspect of devotion. But in the context of this, then the rishis are better because they're not looking at pious and impious. Now, if you have a devotee who's a rishi, like Narada Rishi, that's the best. So that's why he'll be also, you know, the best of the devatas. Like that.
But when we classify those, we always look at the devotion first? Or we start
it depends upon the context, what you're looking at. Because the methodology of the sages will be better than the demigods. But the devotion of the demigods will be better than the sages. So now what you should do, right, how you say, not be a devotee and only reciprocate when people are good and chastise them when they're bad. No. So, right, you're supposed to take the good aspect of both. So these examples are given so you'll be inspired to take those qualities, not to be a demigod or be a god. The apparent disagreement between Madhvacharya and Jiva Goswami is resolved by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Points out in the statement by Srila Madhvacharya, the word rishi or sage indicates the so-called sadhus or saintly persons among the karmis and jnanis. Right? He's not talking about the devotees. Right? So it's important that there never is a contradiction. There never is a disagreement. It just doesn't exist. Between, you know, the Shastras, the Acharyas, one Acharya and the other, one Shastra and another. It doesn't exist. We make it up because for our own, you know, just our own mental speculation, our own, because we like a good, you know, how you say, disagreement or good argument or that, you know, gives some interest, you know. You don't, means that on a good day maybe you're feeling enthusiastic, you want to be involved, but on another day you can sit there and simply eat your lunch and watch the other guys argue and it's fun. Like that. Right. So in other words, there isn't one. Some may say there is, but that doesn't exist. Ordinary fruit of workers and speculative philosophers certainly consider themselves to be the summit of pious morality and altruism. However, since they are ignorant of the supreme position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they cannot be considered equal to the demigods, who are all devotees of the Lord and are aware of all living beings as eternal servants of the Lord. Whether they always remember that when they're doing their duties, they get distracted. That's why they're demigods. Does that make sense? Because otherwise they'd be born in the family of devotees if they were more serious. Does that make sense? Yeah. Even such demigods, however, cannot be compared to the pure devotees such as Narad Muni. Such pure devotees are empowered to award the highest perfection of life to both pious and impious living entities, who have only to follow the orders of such pure devotees. Right? So that's the point you want to get to, is that you have that compassion to all living entities so that whether they're pious or impious, you try to benefit them. But how will you benefit them? That's in devotional service. Right? So these material sages may be benefiting on the material platform. But Narad Muni is not going to do that. He's going to benefit in such a way it's spiritual. Even if it appears in the beginning, it's material. Right? With Dasaratnakar. Then when he comes to rob him, he starts talking about his family. You know, who is he doing this for in his family? You know, okay, you're engaged in a sinful activity. Well, why? Like that. Well, he has to make money. Well, why use, you know, like this? So, but why do you have to make money? He has to support his family. Okay, so you're performing this sinful activity to support the family. So they're benefiting from this. Yes. Okay, as a responsible, you know, householder, that's what you would do. But the point is now, are they willing to share? You're taking a sinful life and maintaining them. Are they willing to share this? And his thing is, of course. You know, so he says, no, I think you should go check. You know, please go check. And I'll be here. You go ask. And so it appears that it's just a mundane thing. But then when he asks and finds out, this, what do you mean? Your business is to maintain us. That you're doing it a sinful way, that's your problem, not ours. So then he gets discouraged. So he comes back at Narad Muni, and now he learns devotional service. Right? So sometimes he'll speak through that medium, but he'll get you to devotional service. Narad Muni is not going to say, well, I shouldn't say anything about devotional service because then Dasaramakar may get upset and go away and all that. And, you know, better to have him around and be completely non-devotional than have him, you know, hear about Krishna and actually get some spiritual benefit, but go away because then, you know, where are the numbers? Right? You know, according to the authority of the Ionians, it's all about numbers. It's all relative, you know. My numbers are better than your numbers, you know. It's like, you know, some great battle in England, like that. And it's known as this great battle. But it's like there was like a handful of people there because it was significant to that family and that's how they got in control. That's the great battle of this. But, you know, it's like 500 people are there at the battle. You know, that's the total battle. You know, so, yeah. So it's relative. Yes.
So Narada Muni is like, if I remember, is like the main person for Upasana Kanda.
Yes, because he's teaching Pancharatra.
Yes.
The Pancharatric process, he's the teacher of that.
Can we say he's a master?
So isn't that the main point of Upasana Kanda?
Is
worshipping Krishna.
Okay.
Right? Means in other words, if you're going to use a ritualistic process to worship, then of that ritualistic process should be for Krishna.
Yes.
And so now that ritualistic process is for Krishna, that's not for fruitive action, that's then the best of these ritualistic processes of worship of Vishnu. So then the Pancharatra, then that is actually the pinnacle of that. So it's not even considered within the Aparavidya, it's actually considered Paravidya.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. The rituals and that will be similar to the Aparavidya.
Mm-hmm.
So then you can say that's our kalpa and things like that. So, because we'll spiritualize everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, music will be for Krishna and architecture will be for Krishna and everything will be for Krishna, but it's still that. So Pancharatra technically is transcendental knowledge. You know what I'm saying? But if you just put it there only, most of the time people can't catch it. So then what are your rituals? Our rituals is the Sakriya Sar Deepika. You know, the samskars. And that's it. We don't do any ashramedas or anything. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. Even such pure devotees are empowered toward the highest perfection of life to both pious and impious living beings, so have only to follow the order of such pure devotees. Sri Vasudev continued, O Brahmana, although I am satisfied simply by seeing you, I still wish to inquire about those duties which give pleasure to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Any mortal who faithfully hears about them is freed from all kinds of fear. The BBT purport states, according to Srila Jiva Goswami, Narad Muni might have been reluctant to instruct Vasudeva because of natural respect for Vasudeva's exalted position as the father of Krishna. Narad might have thought that since Vasudeva was already perfect in Krishna consciousness, there was no need to instruct him in the process of devotional service. Therefore, anticipating Narad's possible reluctance, Vasudeva specifically requested Narad to preach to him about devotional service to Krishna. This is the symptom of a pure devotee. Pure devotee of Krishna never considers himself exalted. To the contrary, he meekly feels that his devotional service is most imperfect but that somehow or another, Lord Krishna, out of his causeless mercy, is accepting such imperfect service. Now, I kind of remember this point was before. So is this the conversation at Kurukshetra? Remember, Vasudeva was doing a sacrifice and he inquired from Narad Muni.
Well, this is after this one. Because the fruitive activities they did in the house of Vasudeva.
In the beginning of the first incarnation, one day when Vasudeva is seated in Dwarka.
In Dwarka, okay, so it's not at Kurukshetra. Okay. The BBT purport states... Did we get that one? No, we're at the top here. The BBT purport states...
No.
We just said that. We've done that. Sri Srivastade continued. Okay, well, take the middle line, right? Okay. Okay, yes. In a previous birth on this earth, I worshipped the Supreme Lord Ananta, who alone can award liberation. But because I desired to have a child, I did not worship him for liberation. Thus, I was bewildered by the Lord's illusory energy. My dear Lord, you are always true to your vow. Please instruct me clearly, so that by your mercy, I may easily free myself from material existence, which is full of many dangers and keeps us constantly bound in fear. Now we get to the BBT purport states. Vasudeva lamented that he had desired Krishna to become his to come to him as a son instead of desiring to go back to Krishna, back to Godhead. Right? So Krishna has to come here rather than we go there. Right? Because he could go there and still be a parent. Right? Those who follow in the footsteps of the parents of Krishna, then they can assist in those pastimes. But he wanted Krishna to come here and be his son rather than he go there and do that. Commenting, okay, instead of desiring to go back to Krishna, back to Godhead, to serve Krishna in the spiritual sky. Commenting on this incident in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada has emphasized that we should desire to go back home, back to Godhead, rather than try to bring the Lord to this world as our son. Nor can we artificially imitate the severe penances Vasudeva and Devaki performed for thousands of heavenly years in previous births, as Sutapa and Prishni. In this connection, Srila Prabhupada states, if we want to get the Supreme Personality of Godhead to become one of us in this material world, this requires great penance. But if we want to go back to Krishna, Chaktva Deham Punar Janma Naiti, Naiti Mam Eti Sorjuna, Bhagavad Gita 4.9, we need only understand him and love him. So, so much easier. The other one takes so much material qualification. Right? Now, they did this penance and austerity for thousands of celestial years. Right? So the difficulty comes up is then, unless you have the piety to have a lifespan of that and have that focus to do that, then how is it possible? So much difficulty to get the Lord to come here. But you go there, you simply have to know about Krishna and have affection for Krishna. Right? Then it works. So much easier. Right? So that's what was said before. That's the path of Bhagavat Marg. The Bhagavat Dharma is to accept that path, because then anybody can take part. Right, it says the foolish. So Kali Yuga is not famous for being full of those who are the foolish. Right? Yeah? Mm-hmm. No?
I have a doubt.
You have a doubt? Okay, what is this doubt?
So on one hand, Srila Prabhupada, he does not recommend us to follow Vasudev in his practice because we're not qualified.
Right.
On the other hand, we have that shloka that says Ramya Kachi Upasana. So our Upasana is in the, you know, following the footsteps of residents of Braj.
Right.
So obviously, we can't do that either. So we follow by the sadhana. So how is that going to happen? How is that going to bring us to the, you know, perfection?
But in following Vaidhi sadhana, who are you worshipping?
Vaidhi.
Yeah. So you're not worshipping, you know, someone of this material world.
Yeah.
So what's the problem? Because you're worshiping Krishna, you're connected to Krishna, so why wouldn't that bring you to Krishna? Service to Krishna then purifies the heart. And as the heart becomes purified, then you're able to appreciate that attraction and affection for Krishna. So if you just are steady in that, then it brings you to that position. So it means there's no need for there to be a doubt. Because the process that they're following then is basically, you could say it would be a process for, it's coming from the, you have the daily duties, occasional duties, and then the kamya, which is your own personal desire. It would be coming from that. But it's connected to Krishna, so in that way it becomes perfect. But it's not a process to follow. Even if someone wanted to become a parent of Krishna, you would follow the process of sadhana bhakti, not what they did there. Because we have to remember, they're eternally the parents of Krishna, but they come here in this pastime, there needs to be a background. Or, well, why is it they're the parents? Oh, because they were, you know, what's it? It's Sutapa and Prishti. Like that. And so then, and then from that, then they continued on in this lifetime. Because at that time, then Prishti Garba was their son. And Prishti Garba, that I remember, is the one who came and gave blessings to Dhruva Maharaj. So the form of Vishnu that Dhruva Maharaj saw was Prishti Garba. Right, so everybody knows everybody here, right? It's all connected, right? But they, I think the benediction they had for some time. So then, also then in this life, then they were as Vasudeva and Devaki. But they're eternally the parents in Dwarka. But they come here and do those things, just like Nanda and Jashoda are eternally the parents, but they're also known for coming and performing austerities in that. But the difference is the one was interested just in the son. The other one, they wanted to be involved in that appearance of the Lord in which he's attracting and benefiting all living entities. So the one is just, he's our son. The other one is that they want to take part and, you know, be in that parental position, but in relationship to the Lord performing pastimes that attracts the minds of all living entities so everybody can go back to Godhead. So you see there's a vast difference in the approach. So therefore, then, Vasudeva, Krishna is his son, and it's recognized. But the pastimes that attract the mind of all living entities, that happens with Nanda and Jashoda. That's why he doesn't have them as they're his sons. No one's denying that. No one's opposing that. You know? So it's much more limited, his interaction. You know, that's in here. But in the, you know, eternal pastimes, then they're always there. Because he saw when Narad Muni went and visited, that many palaces, Krishna would be there with Vasudeva, Devaki, in one of the queen's houses. Right, because he's, you know, you invite over the parents. Like that. It's the high holidays, so you invite them over and stuff like that. You know?
So the cause of Nanda and Yashoda getting this association of Krishna is because of this principle of Rupa Goswami states that Akinchana Bhakti, without desiring anything for one.
Yes, you could say like that. But they're originally like that. That's just their nature. But in the material world, everything's given a cause. Even though Krishna is the cause of all causes, people want to know a cause before the cause of all causes. You know, so therefore, I think, who gives him? Agni gives Krishna his Sudarshan. You know, the Kanchali gets by, you know, when he goes and visits Varuna and he tells him about the Panchajanya demon, so he goes and kills him. You know, someone else gives him his club and this and that. But he eternally has this. It's just that people want to know. And so, yeah, so it's there. But if you understand his eternal nature, that will take you back to Godhead. Just knowing these other facts, that's pious, and you're not going to get any more pious than that. You could become Brahma with this knowledge. but it's, you know, it's not going to get you back to Godhead. Is that...
Following the Bhagavad Dharma, then anyone becomes qualified.
Anyone becomes qualified by calling Bhagavad Dharma.
Yeah, qualified to follow the Pancharatra.
They become qualified to follow Pancharatra. Yeah, if you qualify for Bhagavat, you can follow Pancharatra. But basically, we're following Pancharatra to become qualified for Bhagavat. Because it's so simple and straightforward that we're not buying in it. You know what I'm saying? Just like... let's say... an unknown nerd. Right? You know, like you always have in the city, they always have that memorial for the unknown nerds, right? You know, like that. Every city has one. Right? So, then we don't know the nerd. And he, in his nerdiness, has gone in and checked different things. And in, you know, an area of his interest and, how do you say? Ability. And, or qualification. And so he's found that there's this very cheap thing by price made by an unknown company that's fabulous. And then a really well-known, well-established company, what they make, which is really much expensive, is, you know, not so good. So if he tells you, you're not going to buy it because the more expensive one must be better. Does that make sense? Yeah, so like that. Bhagavat, though it's better, we don't, you know, no, but it's more expensive. Does that make sense? It's like that one devotee was telling me that you have these really big established department stores, the high-end ones. So they have, because they're the best, everyone wants to go there. But everybody doesn't want to pay the price. So they have a common floor where they sell all the goods. And the price is, you know, a little bit more than other places, but it's within reach of your general public, you know, who have that interest. But they'll always have their boutique section where they sell exactly the same thing, but for boutique price. Right? Now, and I was asking him, well, but why isn't this known? He says, because it's never known, because the common person will never go to the boutique because it's expensive, and the person who goes to the boutique will never go to the common because that's what everybody else was. They don't know it's the same stock. You know? And I can't remember how he knew. I think he knew because he either worked there, his mother worked there, she worked in the boutique section, and he saw the stuff, knew the stuff, but he's not going to buy there. So he goes out to the general thing and sees the same. That's how he knew.
Yes. Like that. Did he tell him?
He told us, but...
but the unknown nerd.
Yes, yes, the unknown nerd. Yeah. But that was for... He was commenting on Saks Fifth Avenue. So just if you want to know. Yeah? Right, you all go to Saks Fifth Avenue, right?
Right? Yeah,
right? Yeah, of course.
On the weekend,
yeah. You just pop over on your jet, just land there, you know, take a helipad, you know, a helicopter in, land on the roof. Yeah. Then, okay, no. Therefore, Shukaka. Oh, okay, that's it. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.